Earth got its first clear look at an icy world roughly 4 billion miles away, and it looks like a big snowman. At a press conference on Wednesday, NASA scientists released several new images of Ultima Thule, taken by the New Horizons space probe at a range of more than 300,000 miles out, while traveling 32,000 miles per hour. But on the first day of 2019, it sailed past this irregular-shaped rock, which NASA now says with confidence was once two separate bodies that got stuck together more than 4.5 billion years ago.
One of Britain's most elite soccer teams has signed American Christian Pulisic for $73 million. That reportedly makes him the most expensive American in the sport ever. Pulisic is going to London's Chelsea Football Club and was bought from a German team, Borussia Dortmund. Is it the long-awaited sign that American soccer is coming of age?
An historic moment for Nancy Pelosi amid turmoil in Washington. The veteran lawmaker taking the gavel as Speaker of the House for a second time. Pelosi reclaiming one of Washington's most powerful jobs, 12 years after being sworn in as the first female speaker, as the Democrats regain majority control in the House of Representatives. But Pelosi takes the helm amid a raging storm, a clash over border security with President Trump pushing a partial government shutdown into its 13th day.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us on this Friday, January the 4th, 2019. It's 5:09 in the morning. Now time for us to check markets and business and the economy. Paul Nolte is here today on our program, as he is every Friday with us. Paul from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. We'll talk a little bit about what's happening on the markets these days, and more about some of the other economic news that's out there. It's Jobs Report Friday as well. We'll get a snapshot of how the jobs picture is in the U.S. today. Paul will join us momentarily a little bit later in the program. Brian Summers will be here from Skift.com. Some changes with the United Airlines bonus internal bonus structure plan may actually affect you, the customer. And Brian will be along with us at about 5:40 to tell us about that. So a pretty good show for us on this Friday. We're happy you're with us. Let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk with futures pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street later this morning. Dow, NASDAQ, S&P futures all up more than a percent and a half, nearly a percent and a half on the Dow now as we head to 8:30 Chicago time this morning. A rough day in the markets yesterday with the Dow off more than 660 points at the close. The NASDAQ down nearly 202 points. The S&P down about 62 points. And a rough day for Apple as well. Rough couple of days for Apple as well. And we'll talk more about that with Paul Nolte this morning. In Europe, markets are generally in the green as well, with the FTSE, the DAX, and the CAC all up more than a percent this morning. And in Asia, markets are generally mixed. The Nikkei has started after a couple of days of holiday in the red, down nearly 2.25%, down 452 points. The Hang Seng is up nearly 2.25%. The Shanghai up nearly 2%. And oil is trading at $48 a barrel, which is up about 91 cents, nearly 2%, since we last checked in on it. If the partial government shutdown goes on for weeks, it could delay Americans getting their tax refunds. The IRS is one of the departments shut down as President Trump and congressional Democrats argue over funding for a border wall. As the shutdown continues, the IRS says Americans can still file their 2018 tax returns, but they will not be able to process any refunds until the shutdown ends. For now, only 12.5% of 10,000 IRS employees are working. That number could increase once tax filing season picks up later this month. If the shutdown ends soon, Americans will probably not notice any delay in getting their refund. If it drags into February, however, there could be delays. China and the U.S. will hold trade talks starting Monday. Bloomberg News and Beijing confirming that a U.S. delegation will visit for trade talks on January 7th and 8th. It'll be the first face-to-face negotiation since President Trump and China's president agreed to a 90-day truce in their trade war last month. China's Commerce Ministry says Deputy U.S. Trade Representative Jeffrey Gerrish will lead the U.S. delegation. Let's bring in Paul Nolte this morning from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul's a SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager there. Paul, good morning. Happy Friday. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Good morning. Nice to be with you again.
Good to see you again. Things going well at the company, or has there been a little drinking over the last year?
It's been an interesting fourth quarter, and certainly the new year hasn't really changed too terribly much from last year. With the trading that you highlighted earlier yesterday, the volatility, I think, is going to be with us for a while. The good news is, if you can take a look at how the markets did last quarter, they were down over 13%. When you see the markets down that much in a quarter, the following quarter's kind of mushy and continues on, kind of going sideways in a rather interesting way. But a year out from that, the markets are generally higher outside of a recession. And right now we're not seeing a recession. So we should see higher markets through the course of this year. So we may see a little bit of a bounce back in 2019.
Do you put a reason for all of this on, or is there a bunch of different reasons?
On the decline, there's really a couple reasons. One is the government shutdown. Two is continued trade issues. And then the third is we're seeing global markets or global economy slow down. So we saw China numbers, which really got things going in a bad way yesterday, coming in below expectations. And then on top of that, here in the United States, the ISM data was certainly down a fair amount. And that put a pretty dark cloud over Wall Street yesterday.
The ISM data is something that I wanted to focus a little bit on. That number yesterday was the lowest since 2008. Mm-hmm. Saw some of the biggest weakness since 2008. That's one of those hard data points that you've been talking about
right.
over recent weeks.
Right. And you know, one of we saw it with a lot of the Federal Reserve regional data. So from the Richmond Fed to Dallas, Chicago, et cetera, we saw weaker data in all of those different regions. So it was not necessarily unexpected that we would see that type of a decline. The good news in the report, if there's a little bit there to be seen, is that prices paid came down a fair amount. So we're not seeing those inflationary pressures building at the manufacturing level. We'll get the service data, I think, today, if not then Monday, and that's two-thirds, three-quarters of the economy. So while manufacturing is important, it's a smaller piece of the overall economic puzzle. So the service data is going to be interesting to see. And again, as long as we're above 50, and it doesn't necessarily matter if it's 54 or 53, as long as we're above 50, we're seeing economic expansion.
And then there's Apple. We mentioned Apple has had a rough week. Some of that has to do with China. A lot of it has to do with China and trade. But it was interesting yesterday, the trade representative, one of the trade advisors for the president, economic advisor Kevin Hassett, predicted, in his words, a heck of a lot of U.S. companies are going to be joining Apple, announcing lower than expected earnings because of the trade war. It sounds like the Trump administration knows what's coming.
They do. And, you know, and I think part of their game plan is that, and one of the lines that they have used for a long time is that our economy doesn't need China as much as China needs the United States. And if you look at some of the Chinese data, they are importing very little on a year-over-year basis. Actually, it's negative. They're importing much less from the United States than they have been. Their economy is slowing. And again, as we highlighted, the numbers out of China yesterday were poor. The banking system in China is reducing some of their requirements in trying to get their monetary policy to boost their economy. So from the administration's perspective, they're looking at it saying, okay, the U.S. is actually doing pretty well, China not so well, and they're looking at it as a direct impact of trade. And so the pressure now is more on Beijing than it is on Washington to make a deal.
I know on that note, I will differ on that. I don't know that we're doing so well.
Well,
I think a lot of people might say we're not doing so well.
Well, I mean, you look at the economic data, and we're growing at somewhere between 1.5%, 2%, maybe. We'll get the GDP numbers later. The data has softened some from the first half of the year, but we're certainly not going into a recession at this point. There are some things that are out there that are concerning, certainly, but we're not seeing the recessionary build here. And when you look across the Pacific, the Chinese data is worse than what we're seeing here in the United States. So it's a relative comparison more so than it is an absolute.
And China's such a big country. They're not as transparent as we are. It's hard to know what really is going on there.
It is. Yeah. It's difficult. We're able to discern some things from various data points, and some of the information that they provide is good data. But we get it through trade, we get it through a variety of sources, and we can see those indications, at least, of what their economic growth is.
Paul, today's jobs report Friday again. We'll get the numbers for December, final numbers for the year.
Yeah, we do. And the estimates now are for about 175,000 to 180,000 in payroll gains, certainly up from what we saw in November. The unemployment rate still hanging right around that 3.7 level. And as always, we're going to be looking at wage growth, you know, to see that wages are continuing to grow. And that may be one of the only concerns that the Fed has at this point is wages. We're not seeing it on the inflationary front. Interestingly, that could put pressure on margins at the corporate level, depending on how corporations handle those wage gains and what they do in pricing their products.
What yesterday, I know the two reports are very different, but the ADP report yesterday was 271,000 jobs. What was up with that?
It was a very good rebound from a little bit weaker data the prior month. It points to at least robust numbers this morning. They're not one-to-one, but directionally indicating what should happen in the numbers this morning. The only weak part of the ADP report, not surprisingly, really is energy. As energy prices have come down, you're not seeing as many gains in the energy sector, in the job area there. But everywhere else, we saw big gains in jobs, from healthcare to construction, et cetera. So it's pretty much across the board. Again, indicating that the U.S. economy is pretty healthy at this point.
Is there anything that we should anything in that report that we'll be watching today for signs of weakness? I know the Challenger job cut report was out yesterday, shows a little tick higher in companies planning to let folks go. Is that something that we should be aware of, or is that just kind of a normal?
It's a little bit normal, and certainly the holiday season, it gets a little bit noisy, so they try to adjust those numbers for holidays, and sometimes those adjustments are off a little bit. It should be noted, though, that the unemployment numbers or the employment report data tends to be one of the more lagging indicators. So it's going to be one of the last things to turn. So you're not going to say, we're in a recession based on the employment data. You're going to be looking at a lot of the other parts of the economy. When the employment picture really worsens, we're already in a recession. So we would expect to see the unemployment numbers continue to be good for a while yet, and be very focused on factory orders, the ISM data like yesterday, and some of the other hard pieces of data to indicate whether we're slowing down or not.
I have a question it comes up when we see all the volatility and the stock market going up and down. How do we position ourselves in our portfolios to withstand this? I know you're generally conservative, but you know, what would be your advice as we kind of weather this storm?
Well, one of the things that we've done during the fourth quarter last year is we raised a fair amount of cash. So we're sitting on a little bit more cash than we normally would be. We're still invested in the international parts of the market. The global economy, I think, is still okay, and those markets actually have done well here. You're not going to avoid the decline unless you get completely out. The decision then is, when do I get back in? And that becomes a very tough decision. We've raised some cash, and I think over the next 3 months or so is probably not a bad time to start to deploy it. So I actually had a client call me yesterday saying, is this the bottom? Can we start buying? I said, well, whatever you're going to do, whatever money you're going to put into the account, we'll just divide it by 10. And we'll take some money, put it in next week, wait two more weeks, we'll put some more in, wait another week or two, put some more in, and gradually put that money back into the market over the coming quarter, you know, maybe 4 months or so, to dollar cost average our way back into the market. Our thought is that the first quarter may be a little bit weak here yet, as long as we don't go into recession, and that's the only big caveat right now. It's probably not a bad time to start to nibble here at the markets.
That's a pretty good strategy. You put a little bit in, you're not going to lose a whole lot.
No, you've got some powder that's still dry, and if the markets continue to be squirrely and drop another 600 points or whatever, you can have some firepower, if you will, to buy at lower prices. So I don't know where the bottom is. We may have already seen the bottom just before Christmas Eve. Time will tell on that. So, like I said, it's not an all or nothing decision. It's not a bad thing to leg it back into the market over the next 3 to 4 months or so.
Hey, you want to come back later this morning? We can talk about the jobs report.
then we'll have some more interesting things to talk about. Absolutely. Yeah. We'll be back a little later. Sure.
Yeah, Paul will be back, and we'll put together a little podcast on the jobs report after it's issued, probably up mid-morning, and we'll notify everybody by social media about that. So, Paul, we'll see you a little bit later this morning, and then again next Friday.
Perfect.
All right. Do
it then.
How can people get a hold of you if they
want to drop me a note? They could email is best. It's pnolte, N-O-L-T-E, at kingsviewam.com.
And does that sign people up for Nolte's notes as well?
They can also request those. So I'll be back to the writing desk over the weekend, and we'll be getting those back out again starting next Monday.
Paul puts together a really nice one-sheeter every week on what's going on in the markets and portfolios.
Thank you.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. The co-founder of Southwest Airlines has died. Herbert Kelleher famously used a cocktail napkin with co-founder Rollin King in 1966 to brainstorm a low-fare airline that revolutionized the industry. Kelleher was 87, and the airline did not reveal the cause of death in its announcement. The airline stated started out flying in Texas but slowly expanded. It now flies more than 750 jets in 99 American cities and 10 destinations outside the U.S. Again, Herbert Kelleher was 87 years old. Let's bring in Brian Summers this morning from skiff.com. He's the aviation business editor there and is with us via Skype from Los Angeles. We're going to talk a little bit about the bonus structure for employees at United Airlines that could be impacting customer service, and some news about Norwegian Airlines. Brian, again, with us from Los Angeles. Brian, let's start with the United story. I know we talked about this bonus structure for employees in the past. What's the update on this story?
Yeah, Steve, you know, an employee bonus structure is not normally something that the public cares about, right? I mean, who cares how much an airport agent gets in extra cash at the end of the month for good work? But in this case, of course, United Airlines is a huge employer in Chicago. And people may remember in March, United made a pretty big public relations boo-boo. They had this program for a few years where they offered employees extra bonuses if the airline met certain operational goals, mainly related to on-time performance. People may remember that just 3 or 4 years ago, United was kind of in a mess with its operation. So basically what happened was the airline offered employees extra cash, and then United became, you know, one of the world's most on-time airlines. So the incentive structure worked as it should have. But what happened earlier this year is employees got very used to this money, and United was staying on top. And I think airline employees said to themselves, look, you know, this was not, we did not expect this to be $300 in extra pay for everyone every quarter. We expected these to be stretch goals. So what they did in March was they changed the incentive structure massively. And instead of giving basically every frontline a bonus if United met its marks, they said, we're going to have a lottery when we meet our targets, and some employees are going to win things like a new car and vacation packages and cash and all this kind of like Price is Right stuff. And so those employees would do great, but the vast majority of employees who were used to getting this money would be shut out. They wouldn't win any prizes. So this became public. United looked pretty bad because they were taking money away from their employees. And the airline said, okay, wait a second, let's walk this back. So just in December, just before Christmas, United came out with a new bonus structure for employees. It's going to be pretty similar to the old one, Steve. The main difference is instead of mostly incentivizing on-time performance because the airline is running on time already, they're going to be incentivizing customer service. I think that we all know United has had some tough times with customer service in the last year or two. So they're basically saying, you know what, if we increase our customer satisfaction scores, then you'll get this extra money. And some months you'll get it and some months you won't. And that was the point of this incentive structure in the very first place. You weren't supposed to rely on it every month, every quarter.
And so this is where the customers come in. Now the employees have a extra incentive to make sure that things are going well for the customers.
Well, they do, and people probably get these emailed surveys from United. A lot of us ignore them. Actually, I don't. I usually fill them out, but they do matter in this case. United wants, it has a 5-point scale, and United wants a certain number of its customers to give it at least a 4, somewhere between a 4 and a 5, and if it hits whatever these internal goals are, and they're not saying what they are, then the employees will get the money. If not, the employees won't, at least that quarter.
Now, are we talking a lot of cash here, or is it a smaller car, or do we have any sense of?
Yeah, I think so. If United hits all of its marks, which is unlikely, employees could earn up to $125 per month. And the other goal that United is trying to hit is still operational, Steve. It's what we in the industry call D0. D0 is flights that push back exactly on time or a little bit early. So that's still important to United, and United wants to be the U.S. industry leader in this D0 metric, which is hard to do because I don't know if you remember this, Steve, but we talked about this in the past. American Airlines has this ridiculous zest for the same metric, D0. So you can expect that at least in Chicago, United and American will be dueling to see which airline can have more on-time departures than the other.
Well, this speaks highly for the fact that sometimes employee rebellion works.
It certainly does, certainly in this case. Now, I should caution people, folks may not realize why this D0 metric is important to them. Remember, if employees are incentivized to get an airplane out on time, not 1 minute late, because that doesn't count, they're going to do things like take away bags, right, before boarding. People hate that. They think that they can carry on their bags, and then an agent comes and says, nope, we have to take this bag, we have to check it, we have to leave on time, and everybody gets very frantic. But that's the way it goes sometimes.
So 2018 was a pretty good year for air travel. Let's talk a little bit about that. And 2019, the outlook for 2019, what does it look like?
Sure, Steve. You know, I work for this company called Skift, and among other things, we do travel research. It's not something that I do as the airlines reporter, but two of my very talented colleagues wrote a report recently on the state of travel, especially this coming year. You know, there's a lot of macro indicators out there. There's also the president tweeting. Nobody knows what's going to happen in 2019. But I will tell you that these two talented colleagues that I have actually think that 2019 is going to shape up to be a very robust year for travel. And so not just airfare, but hotel companies think it's going to be at least a steady as she goes year. They write, cruise lines have said that 2019 bookings are looking pretty good. Again, airlines are doing well, and we cover online travel agencies, things like Orbitz and Expedia, and I guess they're doing pretty well as well. But look, nobody can predict the future, right? So we just don't know what's going to happen. But the folks at Skift tell me that the fundamentals of the travel industry are very strong and should remain strong. And they included some data in their piece, something that I was not aware of. I probably should have been. But according to them, travel and tourism can contribute 10.4% of the world's GDP. That was just shocking to me. I don't know what I would have thought it would be, but 10% is a lot.
Yeah, it is. And this is, you know, as everybody kind of watches the stock market and the trade war and fears of perhaps a recession coming, it feels like that if it does happen, it's going to be later in the year. And so that might be part of why this year still remains rosy for the travel and airlines.
Exactly. And you know how it is, Steve. I mean, things are going to be rosy until one day they aren't. It's really, if we could all predict the future, we'd be very rich people, right?
Let's talk about Norwegian Airlines, because I know you've been writing about that. Are we going to see Norwegian disappear?
Steve, I have absolutely no idea. People know that Norwegian Air is a very popular discount airline. It allows you to fly from Chicago to Europe at very cheap prices. It also allows you to buy one-way tickets, which is sort of cool. You know, try going to AmericanAirlines.com and buying a one-way ticket to London. It's going to cost like $3,000. It'll probably cost $400 on Norwegian. So that's the good news. The problem is, you know, Norwegian's model has been tough for them. It's very hard to make money with the low-cost, long-haul model. And, you know, some people are wondering if the airline is going to survive going forward. And folks are really looking at the first quarter, right? Because, you know, how many people want to go from Chicago to Paris in July? Pretty much everyone, right? You just want to go to Barcelona, you want to go to Paris, you want to go to London when the kids are out of school, when it's nice weather, you want to be there. The problem is Norwegian has all these airplanes and you have to somehow fill them in January, February, and March. And that is so hard. It's actually hard for any airline, but it's doubly hard for Norwegian because Norwegian doesn't carry a lot of business travelers, right? I mean, if you're a lawyer in Chicago and you have to go to London, you have to go even if it's 30 degrees in London, and you're going to fly business class, and you're going to make a fair amount of money for American Airlines. But when you have an all-coach configuration like that, it's just so hard for Norwegian. So their main goal, it's very simplistic, is just to get through the winter, get to the warm weather, and then make some money. Try not to lose too much money in the first quarter. As you say, there are some folks out there that wonder, you know, can they do it? A lot of European airlines go bust in the winter, and it's going to be interesting to see if Norwegian can make it. I think that they can, Steve. I just don't know for certain.
Well, one of the good things has to be that the fuel panic is over, at least for now.
Absolutely. I mean, you'll remember that, what, 4 or 5 months ago, people thought fuel was going to go through the roof. It was going up and up and up, and airlines like Norwegian were really sweating it. And then for reasons, you know, nobody can quite understand, fuel came way back down. And so Norwegian is going to have a very reasonable fuel bill this winter, and that should help it stay alive.
All right, Brian. Good talk as always. Happy New Year.
Thank you, Steve.
Brian Summers is the aviation business editor for Skift. That's at Skift on Twitter and Skift.com. And make sure you sign up for the weekly Skift Airline Innovation Report. It arrives in your inbox every week at Skift.com/airline. You can also follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Summers.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street later. That Dow futures up 309 points. That's about 1.3%. Same story over at the S&P, up about 1.5%. NASDAQ futures are up 115 points, nearly 1.75%. Let's bring in Orion Samuelson this morning. Orion, good morning. Happy New Year.
Well, good morning and Happy New Year to you. And, of course, I'm working from WGN West in Scottsdale, Arizona this morning. And I'll tell folks who are planning to come to the desert for heat, you're not going to find it. We've had frost the last two mornings here in the Valley of the Sun and snow about 14 miles north of Scottsdale. So kind of wintry out here. And so I think sweaters and parkas probably you'll want to pack into the suitcase. Now, looking at markets yesterday, wheat futures up 1.5%, reaching a one-week high on a technical rebound. So soybeans hit a two-week top. Concerns about declining crop prospects in Brazil. We talked about that earlier this week. And also rumors of Chinese buying interest. Corn followed the firm trend, posting a session high near the close. And so we saw March wheat up 7.25 cents, March corn up 4.5, and January soybeans up 6 cents. Meanwhile, livestock cattle futures eased about 1%, weighed down by technical selling. Live cattle futures weakened for the fourth straight session at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange yesterday. Now, a week from today, a very important report coming out from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Maybe the partial government shutdown could delay the release of a report on Friday, January 11, That includes the monthly World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates Report, a quarterly report on U.S. grain stocks, a final crop production report for the United States for 2018, and USDA's report on winter wheat planting for harvest in 2019. The Department of Agriculture will make a decision today on whether or not they will be able to issue that report. But if there's no change in the situation on the government shutdown, it probably won't be coming out. So that's going to lead to a lot more questions, Steve, as far as livestock and grain trade is concerned.
Orrin, I know I want to go back to the trade situation. I know there's a lot of hope and optimism and concern that's continuing about this. We reported earlier that there's going to be a meeting in China January 7th and 8th. The U.S. trade delegation's going there. That seems to be good news, indicating maybe some movement forward.
There seems to be a slight thawing of relations on trade between China and the United States. China is opening its market to more activity as far as imports from the United States. But they also are supposed to increase their buying. And in a phone conversation a few days ago, the presidents of China and the U.S. said that progress was certainly made, but it will probably be more realistic when they sit down face to face, because they've now been talking on the phone. And so the trade delegation from the U.S. going to China hopefully will thaw out the relationship even more. But you never know with China, because you never know what they're telling you is the truth. So we'll wait and see.
All right. Orrin, have a great weekend.
You too.
All right, Orrin Samuelson with us this morning. Make sure you tune into the morning show tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock right here on 720 WGN. A couple of other stories before we leave you this morning. One involving Sears. Sears will decide today if it will accept the offer that could keep it in business. The chairman of Sears Holdings, Eddie Lampert, has made a multi-billion dollar bid to keep the struggling retailer open. Lampert's hedge fund submitted a bid for virtually all of Sears' assets, including 425 stores. Sears and its advisors must determine today whether Lampert's bid is qualified. The department store chain filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in October and is set to close 40 stores in February. Apple is serving up some good news in what has been an otherwise tough week for the technology company. Apple says its App Store made $1.2 billion between Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve as people began using gift cards. It also reported a new single-day record of $322 million being spent on New Year's Day. Games and self-care apps were the top sellers. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for Friday, January the 4th. The final jobs and unemployment figures for 2018 are due this morning. Analysts see the economy adding 180,000 jobs in December, 25,000 more than in November. The unemployment rate forecast remains steady at a half-century low of 3.7%. The numbers, again, coming mid-morning. Also today, we'll get the PMI Services Index, also the EIA Natural Gas Report and the Petroleum Status Report. A couple of Fed speakers out today, including John Williams. Actually, he speaks tomorrow. Rafael Bostic speaking on monetary policy. And Jerome Powell has a speech scheduled today, the Federal Reserve Chairman himself, speaking about monetary policy and the economy at mid-morning. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, January the 4th.